Chapter 18. Mrs. Spunklecreef was a fantastic landlady. She lived on the ground floor of the old house. She rarely left her home, was mostly deaf, and generally didn't poke her nose into my business as long as my rent check came in, which it pretty much always did these days, on time or a bit early. A small army of crazy strong zombies had assaulted my home without waking her up, probably because they had the grace to do it after her bedtime, which was just after sundown. But I guess the visit from the cops and the FBI had been even louder than that, because as Molly pulled the blue beetle into the little gravel parking lot, I saw her coming up the stairs from my apartment, one at a time, leaning heavily on her cane. She wore a soft blue nightgown and a shawl to ward against the October chill in the night, and her bright blue eyes flicked around alertly.
"There you are," she said irritably. "I've been calling your house all evening, Harry."
"Sorry, Mrs. S," I said. "I've been out." I don't think she could make the words out very well, but she wasn't stupid.
"Obviously you've been out," she said. "What happened to your nice new door? It's wide open. If we get another of those freak thunderstorms, the rain will pour right in, and we'll have mold climbing up the walls before you can say Jack Robinson."
I spread my hands and talked as loudly as I could without actually shouting. "There was a mix-up with the police."
"No," she said. "The lease is quite clear. You are responsible for any damages inflicted on the apartment while you are a tenant."
I sighed and nodded. "I'll fix it tomorrow."
"Oh, not so much sorrow as surprise, Harry. You're a good boy, generally."
She peered from me to Molly, Susan, and Martin.
"Most of the time. And you help out so when the weather is bad."
I smiled at her in what I hoped was an apologetic fashion. "I'll take care of the door, ma'am."
"Good," she said. "I thought you would. I'll come check in a few days."
Mouse emerged from the darkness, not even breathing very hard from running to keep up with the beetle. He immediately went over to Mrs. Spunklecreef, sat, and offered her his right paw to shake. She was so tiny and the dog so large that she hardly had to bend down to grip his paw. She beamed broadly at Mouse, shook, and then patted his head fondly.
"You can tell a lot about a man from how he treats his dog," she said.
Mouse walked over to me, sat down panting happily, and leaned his shoulders against my hip affectionately, all but knocking me down. Mrs. Spunklecreef nodded, satisfied, and turned to walk away. Then she paused, muttered something to herself, and turned back around again. She dug into her robe's pocket and produced a white envelope.
"I almost forgot. This was lying on your stairs, boy."
I took it from her with a polite nod. "Thank you, ma'am."
"Welcome."
She shivered and wrapped her shawl a little more tightly around her.
"What is the world coming to? People breaking down doors."
I shot a glance at Molly, who nodded and immediately went to Mrs. Spunklecreef's side, offering an arm for support. My landlady beamed up at her, saying,
"Bless you, child. My cane arm got tired on the way down."
Molly began helping her back up the little ramp to her apartment's front door. Mouse immediately went to the bottom of the stairs, his nose questing. Then he turned back to me, tail fanning the air gently. No surprises lurked in my apartment. I went on down into it, waving the candles and fireplace to life with a murmur and a gesture, tearing open the envelope as I went to the fireplace to open it. Inside was a piece of folded paper and another smaller envelope, upon which was written in Lucio's flowing writing, "Read me first." I did.
"If you are receiving this letter, it is because someone has rendered me unable to contact you. You must presume that I have been taken out of play entirely. The bearer of this note is the person I trust most among every warden stationed at Edinburgh. I cannot know the particulars of my neutralization, but you can trust his description implicitly, and I have found his judgment to be uncommonly sound in subjective matters. Good luck, Harry. A."
I stared at the note for a moment. Then I unfolded the second piece of paper very slowly. This one was written in blocky letters, so precise they almost resembled a printed font rather than handwriting.
"Hello, Dresden. Lucio wanted me to bring this note to you in event something happened to her. No idea what her note says, but I'm to give you whatever information I can. I'm afraid it isn't good news. The council seems to have gone quite mad. After your appearance at Christo's grandstand, a number of ugly things happened. several young wardens were caught debating amongst themselves about whether or not they should simply destroy the Duchess in Edinburgh to ensure that the war continued. After all, they reasoned, the vampires wouldn't be suing for peace if they could still fight. On Christo's orders, they were arrested and detained by older members of the council, none of whom were wardens, in order to prevent them from destabilizing diplomatic deliberations. Ramirez heard about what had happened, and I suspect you can guess that his Spanish by way of American reaction was more passionate than rational. He and a few friends, only one of whom had any real intelligence, hammered their way into the wing where the wardens were being detained, at which point every single one of them, except for the genius, naturally, was captured and similarly imprisoned. It's quiet desperation here. No one can seem to locate anyone on the senior council except Christos, who is quite busily trying to save us from ourselves by sucking up to Duchess Ariana. The warden's chain of command is a smashing disaster at the moment. Captain Lucio went to Christos to demand the release of her people and is at this time missing, as are perhaps 40% of the senior-most wardens. She asked me to tell you, Dresden, that you should not return to Edinburgh under any circumstances until the senior council sorts this mess out. She isn't sure what would happen to you. She also wanted me to tell you that you were on your own. I will send dispatches to you as events unfold, assuming I don't vanish, too. Steed. P.S. Why, yes, I can in fact capitalize any words I desire. The language is English. I am English. Therefore, it is my opinion which matters, colonial heathen. I read over the letter again, more slowly. Then I sat down on the fireplace mantel and swallowed hard. Steed was an appellation I'd stuck on Warden Chandler, who was a fixture of security in Edinburgh, one of the White Council's home guards, and once I had thought upon it, one of the guys who I'd always seen operating near Anastasia and in positions of trust. Standing as the sole sentinel at a post that normally required half a dozen, brewing the wardens and their captain their tea.